Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm just walking down the little lane. Well, I say it's a little lane. It's not really a little lane. It's a little track towards a chair that is, and a little table, outdoor picnic table, which is in the sunshine, our little sun station, if you like. I've already had a cup of coffee, and then I thought, oh, where's my recorder? I didn't bring it out. It's it's just after 6:30 on Friday. Is it the 18th, Friday? I think it's the 18th. It might be the 19th. I'm not sure. I think it's the 18th of June, 2026. The sun is shining and there is a beautiful blue sky. We've had overcast mornings for the last few days, but then the sun has managed to burn through. So that's been nice. Excuse me, I have to light my pipe again. I've already packed it and everything. And I'm smoking a bit of Red Lion. This is the Rat Trays number. And reclining in the sunshine, which is absolutely very lovely. At 6:30 in the morning, dew is still on the floor, on the ground, on the grass. I'm at Biggleswick Farm. And got a day of doings. I had some strange dreams last night. One of which, and I thought I would talk about it, one of which was I was standing in for somebody on a radio programme. And I had a studio all set up, like the old Vogue Show podcast studio in the shed. But this chap was mucking me about who I was standing in for, or the producer, or whatever it was. And I said, I know how to do this. I've did a podcast for 10 years in a studio, which I built myself, and it was a wacky thing, and I know how to do it. And he said, well, we want talking points. It was a talk show. We want talking points. And I said, yes, I realise that. I can come up with some of those. Anyway, the equipment wasn't working properly. And so I was just struggling. You know, it was like everything was an effort. And then, so one of my talking points, I remember, was does technology let you down at the last minute? And phone in and let us know what technology has let you down, and the comedy situations or the tragic situations that have occurred when technology has let you down at the last minute. I thought, oh, that's a good talking point, actually, because people, you want a talking point that people can relate to. And this was in my dream. Anyway, for some reason, I woke up, and this was about 4:00 in the morning.
So only a couple of hours ago.
And I thought to myself, I woke up with that, you know, sometimes you have a dream and you wake up with the full feeling of it. The full feeling of enjoying what you're doing. And then you wake up and you go, oh, that was a dream. And because it was a dream, and it was a frustrating dream, and it wasn't quite going to plan, but you woke up with this full feeling. And I thought, you know, I could do that standing on my head. But, and then I thought, should I resurrect the old Vogue show, the podcast version that I started in 2004? Or 2005, beg your pardon. 21 years ago. This has been going, this the Naked Englishman behind the scenes. This is was supposed to be behind the scenes of the irreverent, wacky Vogue show. Which was, you know, full-on madness. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the old Vogue show. All this sort of stuff. And I thought, I kind of miss it. I thought, I've moved on. I've done, you know, numerous things since then. Why did I stop? I haven't stopped the Naked Englishman. It's been there in the background. I may miss a few days. But for 20-odd years, I've been holding this, not the same recorder, this one I must have had for 10 years. It's done me very well. That's quite amazing, isn't it? And I miss it, I suppose. I woke up missing it anyway. When I went back to bed, I went for a wee and went back to bed for a bit. And I was lying there thinking, oh, you could build a studio on the land and do it from the land. It would be quite good, because before it was from a beach hut in Worthing at the edge of the South Downs. At the foot of the South Downs, at the edge of the English Channel. And I used to say that. I mean, it'd be quite fun. From a beach hut in Worthing, at the edge of the English Channel, at the foot of the South Downs, this madness comes to you. And so I used to do the podcast for half an hour every day. Every day at 5 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock at night. There were different times when I did it at different times. And it would either be on the day of or recorded the night before the day of. And I thought, I used to be really good at that. People really liked it. It was full of silly voices and fun. And there'd be some people, perhaps, who have been very long-term listeners. I don't know. I don't know if anybody really listens to this anymore, because it's so ad hoc and it doesn't come to you on an RSS feed. It's not on Spotify. You have to go to looking for it. It's a very difficult podcast, this one, really, to get hold of, and especially if I don't do it every day, and you go to the website and you look and it's not there, and then you go the next day, it's not there. You know, the incentive to continue looking to see it in the vague hope that there's something to listen to from the Vobes that has anything worthy of listening to is difficult, and I appreciate that. And only really dedicated listeners would do that, and it's been that way for some time. Certainly for the last 6 months, hasn't it? The land has become a bit of a... Well, 10 months we've been coming here. It's been a full-on project. But the question I suppose I wanted to discuss was, do you go back and do things that you used to do? Is that a wise move? Or do you continue to do new things, different things? Or do you go back and do things slightly differently because you know the skills, whatever it might be, but in a different way, in a different environment? I mean, doing it on the land, let's say, even if it was only one show a week. And there is an outfit called Food for Thought Radio, which is an internet radio station, and the guy who runs it, Paul, prefers everything to be live, but mostly it's all pre-recorded. He likes live, and I like live, because live there's risk of things going wrong. We did a version of the Vobe show on YouTube, and perhaps some of you viewers, listeners, remember that. I don't know. Julia and I did it initially. Tried to put it on YouTube, and then when I was going out with Julia, which I still am, of course, we did it together, persuaded Julia to do it, and then, you know, it took a bit of time, but she sort of found her foot with it. It was a different show, completely different show, because you were watching as well as listening. And there is a huge difference in how you approach something that you listen to and something that you watch. You might not think so if you just thought about The Naked Englishman, because, you know, in a thing like this, you might say, well, it's just the same as sitting in a chair and doing a monologue. And that's true to a degree, although, of course, some people do film themselves making cups of coffee and walking about the house and, you know, doing certain chores as they're talking, I grant you. But there's a certain intimacy, and there's a certain way of presenting yourself on audio, I think. Audio is more truthful. Not necessarily truthful. I mean, the Vogue show was high entertainment. And the great advantage was the images were in people's head, and we spoke about this all the time. And in a way, it is a superior format. Because the audience have to do something. You give everybody everything on a plate on video. They don't have to do it. The presenters don't have to describe things. They don't have to describe the verdant colour of the grass, for example, or the beauty of the orange of the sunshine coming up, or, you know, the whatever it might be, everything that you... And I had to learn to describe as I was going on, but describe in a way that isn't too childlike. And where sound effects will conjure up a picture, one would use that, and particularly real sound effects. And when I was doing my, what they called back then, what did they call them? I forget what the silly term was, because I thought it was an American term. Sound seeing tour, there you go. I mean, you were just recording outdoors in a sort of documentary style, but they called it a sound seeing tour, the early podcasters, because it was new to them. But I was somebody who listened to Radio 4 for donkey's years. I don't listen to it now because it's so biased and it's full of mainstream crap. But I did listen to it and I learned a hell of a lot. It was well presented in terms of technically, and it was well... the programming was put together very well. You know, I think the BBC at one point, and probably still from a technical point of view, is the best in the world, or it used to be. The concepts of radio production, sound effects, BBC Radio 4 really had it. Comedy and documentary and what have you. The content, on the other hand, has changed. And perhaps it was always biased, and perhaps it was always used as a mouthpiece to form people's opinions. That may be true, but and perhaps you can't help that to a certain degree, because whatever you say is perhaps helping to form somebody's opinion, whether the opinion is I disagree with you totally, or that I actually am swayed and influenced by what you say to act in a certain way, perform in a certain way, think in a certain way, or buy certain products, you know. But we're all influenced by each other. We're influenced by our parents. But the question I suppose I'm asking is, do we go back? Should we go back? Should we go back and do something again? I suppose the thing with me is I love the things that nobody wants. Nobody really listens to radio. Or... I mean, I suppose people do listen to podcasts, don't they? I suppose they do, but you don't make any money from it. So a small number of people do listen to podcasts, but you know, the market is flooded. So that's one thing. It hasn't stopped me doing The Naked Englishman, and the reason it hasn't stopped me doing The Naked Englishman is because I can grasp the microphone with no preparation, turn it on, record, whatever is happening and whatever is in my thoughts, whether those thoughts have fully crystallized into something I fully endorse or whether it's just me trying to work out something, and a whole range of different subjects, as you know, sometimes philosophical, sometimes just boringly everyday, and sometimes on a theme, but it's simple. You don't need any expensive equipment. One microphone recorder, and then a laptop or a computer to take the file, re-encode it, top and tail it if you need to, or amend anything, which I don't in The Naked Englishman. You just get it as it is, and upload it and put it on the server for people to download. It's easy. It's simple. And I find it enjoyable because it means I can, first thing in the morning particularly, I can't really do it. I have done it a few times, haven't I, at different times. But first thing in the morning is when I'm waking up and I'm alert in a different format. I haven't got going in the day. It helps me think. It helps to sharpen my mind. And it forces me to try and communicate as coherently as possible, using as much verbiage as one can, and exercising my vocabulary, which you may not do in ordinary conversation with people, or indeed in the workplace, where your vocabulary is going to be limited to whatever the work is about. And unless you're expressing yourself perhaps in writing, which is my other great love, and I don't do enough of that because it's longer, again, I would do that first thing in the morning. And I was doing that. I must have been doing both at one point when I was at home, writing and recording The Naked Englishman. I cannot remember now. I wrote my children's book. I started writing the children's book. Of course, I'm now writing, or trying to write, adult books. I wrote the Biggleswick one. But when I wrote Splidge the Cragflinger, and that was a trilogy, and then a number of other books, which have, you know, Pinkheads. Was it Pinkheads? I think it was called Pinkheads. That was the story of Snug and Cosy. They were relatively intelligent writing, actually, as I think about it now. And I've read most of the stories I wrote to Julia. The Snod Hill adventures with Wally and Geoffrey and Deirdre Dimple, the orphans of Snod Hill who escape down to Lyme Regis and build a car and have adventures and get involved with pirates and things. I wrote two books of that. The other one is not published. I think Snod Hill is published, actually. I think it's on Amazon. I think you can buy it. I don't know whether anybody has. It's sort of buried away. And it's a lovely tale. And I read that to it's a passing of time. So Splidge was written in 2014. What's that, 12 years ago? And then I wrote all these other books. I must have been doing The Naked Englishman in between all of that and earning a living. Not from the books. I have a strange life. It's not strange to me, of course. It's strange to other people, I think. I've got a number of books that I want to finish. They sort of petered out after several thousand words. I think down to disillusionment, not in the work itself, but in the fact that people don't read, not enough people, and that you can't get published very easily. And self-publishing is tricky because although you can publish it yourself and look at the book and be very vain about it, nobody buys it. So you don't make a living, or even you don't even make the money back of the time lost in writing the book. You know, a few people might buy it, and a few people might say, yeah, it was all right. But it doesn't really matter that they're not finished as such, because you may argue, but, you know, you're one of these people who start something and never finish anything. Well, that's not true with Biggleswick. That was written and published all within a year. And it was great. And I loved doing it. And it had an important message inside that I wanted to share. And also it was a number of things that I wanted to get off my chest about where we are and what's happened in the world and what we could do about it and the results of how we ought to, in my humble opinion. And the feedback generally, I mean, for the small number of sales, really, has been lovely. But it's not sold. It's made the money back that it cost to print and a little bit more. That is true. And if one had a number of books, you could survive just about if you had the same number. I mean, you know, 300,000 subscribers to YouTube and a very, very tiny percentage who invested in the book. It shows you that there is no real future. And of course, the book, although it was fiction, and although it had all these so-called truth bombs in it that I believe in, and I loved writing about the characters and the whole situation, I wouldn't want to write the same thing again, because I've said I wouldn't want to put all these truth bombs in. But it was the truth bombs, I think, the reason that people bought the book, because of all the different people I'd interviewed, and I had disseminated what I think is the solution to a world, a corrupt world, that's being manipulated by a cabal of people, whether people think that's true or not, and a way to improve people's lives and get rid of all the government overreach. But I don't know how you would write that in a second book, really, because everything was piled into the first one. And there is no real follow-up to Biggleswick because, spoiler alert, they are a town that wouldn't comply. Now, and of course it had to have a happy ending. Otherwise, it would leave people thinking, well, what's the point of following any of, not advice, but some of the routes that some of the characters did. So what would you do? You would then have to start with another conflict. I mean, a story is a conflict. You can't have a story that just is no conflict. But there may be several conflicts. And as you know, I've been reading a lot of R.F. Delderfield. And his books, particularly the saga books of large numbers of people, they all have their own personal conflicts. And throughout the book, there's a sort of there's an overreaching arc of story arc, if you like. But within that, each character has their own conflicts within, and excuse me, you're following their lives. That's the whole point of a saga, really, rather than a single adventure. Biggleswick, you follow a very short period of time in which a town wakes up and decides to do something about it. And my style is a bit old-fashioned. But nobody, you know, not significant numbers, bought the book. If I'd sold 10,000, I'd be very happy. If there was a clamour of people saying, please write another book, I'd be very happy. People have written and said, yes, it was a, you know, very well written book, interesting points, we very much enjoyed it. I think a couple of people said it would be, you know, looking forward to the next one. But that's it. So one needs, when one's not making really any decent money from writing, you need a bit more motivation to do it, because it takes a lot of time. People have no idea how much time it takes. And commitment, of course. And again, people have no idea of the commitment. And the difficulty. You think you just sit there and write words on a page and you just chuck it out. It's not quite like that. My grammar is awful. My spelling is dreadful. My education was rubbish. It has improved. And certainly reading and doing The Naked Englishman, of trying to work out how to express yourself, has been of absolute great benefit. And I suppose doing the monologues has been useful, and of course the interviews and all the experiences that one does every experience you have comes out in what you write, of course. And I want to write. I would like to write more books, not just to have a shelf load of books with my name on it, but because what is a name anyway, but more because I want to entertain. I want people to find themselves in a world of fun or mischief or whatever, you know, and enjoy it and be able to put the book down and go, yeah, that was a nice hour spent reading. I'm looking forward to his next book. Or the next time I sit down and read the next chapter, whatever it is. Because that's the enjoyment I get from reading. And I want others to have that. But from something that I feel I've got inside me to talk about. And I love writing characters and situations and, you know, fun things and a bit zany in places, a bit sad and all those sort of things. But it does take a lot of time, and I've been busy with the land, trying to get this into some situation. And of course, we don't live here, so there's a lot of commuting, to-ing and fro-ing. We might stay in the caravan a night or two, but that's not the same as actually living here. There's no house, and you can't really live in a caravan for any great length of time anyway. I mean, I could if I was on my own, but of course there's Julia and there's the cats and she's got children and I've got a house and it's full of stuff. And you can only bring a bag full of bits to stay overnight in a caravan. And then there's the commute and there's the cats. Did I mention the cats? Which are, can't leave them on their own. And I can't keep asking people to come in and feed the cats. The cats, you know, love it here because they can run around, and I have no real garden to speak of, only a tiny little yard at home, so they've got huge benefits of this. We've got benefits from exercising by building things and growing things and digging things and watering things and moving about. And the best part is this for me, the early morning get up at 6-ish, especially when the sun is shining, and either recording one of these, but coming out into nature, away from the roads, breathing the fresh air, having a pipe, which people might think is an oxymoron, and basking in the early morning sun, which I can't do at home. Because of the position of the house and the position of the sun, etc. So this is a wonderland. And it's trying to fit in everything. And, you know, I'd love to do a mad radio show. And I'd love to do the writing. The writing is, I suppose, easier because there's no equipment involved. You could write in longhand. All right, Mo? Mo is at my feet. I know. He wants feeding, that's why he comes over. Mostly. They see us as the provider, the great provider. And I guess, well, they're Julia's cats really, but we are the great provider. But they do have to wait occasionally, because I'm waking myself up. I'll feed you in a minute. Anyway, so it's a conundrum that I'm trying to fathom. And of the two, if you said which of the two would you prefer to do, well, I think the writing would come on top, even though it's more tedious and time-consuming, because the old Vogue show, I could just, you know, once I had all the equipment and everything, I could do it as live, go in, switch it on, and I would look at the news and take bits out of the paper and make comments on it. I don't want to do that now. And I, you know, we went on sound-seeing tours and edited those up and bung them in the show and had reviews, beer reviews particularly, but we would talk about different things. So I mean, it was mostly solo, but I had my friend at the time, Jimmy, who would come in And other people came in as guests. And I would do all sorts of stuff on the show. But it's a huge commitment. And also, like with the Naked Englishman, all these things you need to do regularly. So although the dream that I had has aroused the feelings of enjoyment and fun, I suppose talking it through now, it's a time that I've done it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wish I could have made some money from it, so that, not to make money for the sake of making money, but so I could have supported myself to continue doing it. But that wasn't the case. And it's the same with writing. You know, I think a lot of people who have passion to do something and they want to make money from it, it's not because they want to be rich necessarily, because when, you know, wealth, I think, brings a whole series of other problems and distracts you. I think when you're hungry, you work better. But if you're able just to support yourself, make enough money, you write a book a year, let's say, in my case, a fictional story a year, and it brought in enough money so that you have got time to read another subject and research and figure out your characters and your story and write it and then edit it and then publish it and have an audience ready to buy it. The reason I stopped doing Splidge and the other children's books is because I realised that children don't really read. The market was full of books, and the type of books were not the sort of thing I was wanting to write, and nobody would publish it. And I suppose it's a similar thing with adult books. And when I say adult books, I mean books for grown-ups. That actually I realised I was writing, but I didn't initially have the confidence to write that because I thought other writers were far superior. But I had to write all this other stuff to learn the craft. I'm not saying I'm any good at it. I'm still learning the craft. But I feel now I could write some nice books. They may not be anything, you know, comparable to writers like R.F. Delderfield, who wrote all his life and worked on a newspaper and wrote plays and wrote all sorts of things, and had success and had editors and all the rest of the stuff that goes along with it. But it would be lovely to do it. It would be lovely, particularly, and it's something I could do on the land. But we're not here enough. We don't live here. Well, I could do bits at home. It's the land is very demanding, and it's thoroughly enjoyable. It's a wonderful thing to be doing at my time of life as well, because instead of sitting around just watching YouTube videos or you know, doing a dead end job, let's say, it's keeping me active. It's keeping my brain. I'm having to figure out how to build things, and I'm continually cutting the grass or scything or, you know, watering plants and clearance, cutting brambles and keeping on top of things. And then having time to just sit, smoke my pipe and just look at the beauty around. And one never, you know, having established this, you just realise that this is Eden. And then you're tasting the food that you've grown. And it's so much better than going to the shop. I've waffled on for a very long time. I'm sorry about that. On this occasion, I suppose I don't ask for feedback, as you know, and people don't give me feedback. And I don't know how many people would have listened. Perhaps 10 people, if that. It's very small. But if anyone is inclined, based on long-term listening to me and, you know, maybe a little bit of feedback in some way on this subject would help crystallise whether it's worth pursuing that or whether it's, you know, at the end of the day, of course, if somebody says, no, Richard, you should write, or you should do a thing, does it really make any difference? I suppose if I was overwhelmed by 10,000 people saying, we can't wait for the next book, or your writing style is great, or we love what you do, I guess you'd think, yeah, there is enough money there to support oneself. So maybe the feedback is irrelevant, really. Perhaps it's something I've just got to come to terms with myself. Bearing in mind that this, as I said, yesterday's podcast, was it yesterday's or whenever the last one was, it's just a game. This is just a game. You can't take it with you. But we are supposed to enjoy it. And if it's a passion, one should explore that passion and make it happen. Thank you for listening. Sorry it was a long one. Bye for now.